Sud Alaska, October the 13th to October the 16th, Pioneers of Alaska Convention at Sud, being held in the Civic Auditorium, and there seems to be quite a lot of activity. There's been planes landing every day, three planes yesterday and four planes the day before. There's anywhere from 18 to 20, two or three on each plane. Everybody's getting acquainted. Just a number drove in over the highways. And this morning of the 14th, we are getting organized. Registration's almost completed. And the ceremony is to start right after 10 o'clock this morning. This is Harry Hughes, Igloo 4, Fairbanks, Alaska.
Sisters of Pioneers of Alaska, I am prepared to open the 44th Convention of the Grand Igloo of the Pioneers. Before I do anything else, I want to introduce to you our Governor. Speed it up a little bit. So I will ask the Boy Scouts of America this time to advance the colors of our state and our country. Join with me in the pledging allegiance to our flag after we salute the flag. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. go back to your various studies. And thank you very much for your presentation.
All planned out because my head seems kind of empty right now. There's been a great deal of work going into the planning of our convention. I'm glad that you all have come. That's what I want.
A grand total of 135,000 years of the Alaskan Living Venture. Think of it. I feel like a pup. But I won't bark, and I can't fight. When I was a kid, I come running into the house, and my mother says, "Alex, you've been fighting again. You've lost your two front teeth." And I said, "No, I didn't, Mom. Here they are." And I wasn't born with a tail to wag, although some of the people in town think it would be very becoming with the horns that the mayor is supposed to wear around here. So much for the tools of the trade. We all have our problems, and it wouldn't be enough power for us to join together in revealing them. I think the pioneers have done something really tremendous. Think of it. They've broken the weather barrier into Juneau. Well, we the people ought to do better or good or bright, and that's all there is to it. It's not like the premier who rushed in excited and informed the king, "Sire, we are about to be invaded by a neighboring country." And the king calmly, coolly, and collectively stated that, "Well, that's all right. Notify the American Relief Commission at once and tell them to add a little extra bacon." You people have had to earn your bacon. You're still earning your bacon. It isn't about to happen here, so we won't hold our breath and wait for it. But I would like to close with this thought in mind. It is our duty to make someone happy every day, every week, and every month. It is our duty to make someone happy. And when I close, I feel that I will have fulfilled my pledge for a year. Thank you so much, sir.
Well, that was very nice of our mayor, and I think we have to wait about 15 more years. I think we make a darn good pioneer. And now, I have a little task. Oh, incidentally, I would like to say that the change in the program that our acting grand president mentioned was not the printer's fault. They made plenty of goofs, if you'll notice through the program, with the spellings and whatnot. We have with us today our governor, a pioneer, and everywhere he goes, they just introduce him with the biggest plaudits, and anything I might say would be repetitious, and we all know him, so I will just say it gives me the greatest pleasure and honor to introduce our governor, pioneer, William Beatty.
Not only is it always good to meet with fellow pioneers of Alaska, but I may be in need of reinstatement in Seward itself. I was extremely sorry not to get here as planned on the 4th of July, and hope that that failure didn't disturb the 4th of July activities of Sewardites as much as it did mine. Last month I talked to Sitka before the State Labor Convention, where I mentioned that effective old pioneer custom, the blue ticket style. It was not unlike the blue plate special. Right here in Seward, I almost left Alaska some years ago by that pioneer method of blue ticketing. In the early days of Matanuska, a whole trainload of construction workers was blue ticketed outside. A combination of circumstances found me among them. Locked up in one of the coaches, we had a wild ride down the old rail bed from Palmer to Seward. I was herded off the dock with the rest of them here at Seward, onto the boat and down into the steerage. I was certain that I was soon to arrive broke in Seattle. Had I not been recognized by a friendly steerage steward and spirited off the boat of Valdez, I would certainly have been deported via the blue ticket route and stranded on the beach outside. As was said by the fellow who was being ridden out of town on the rail, with many spectators on hand, as there were on the dock that day in Seward, to make sure that all of us blue-ticketed guests got safely aboard, if it weren't for the honor of the thing, I'd rather have walked. I believe this is an altogether appropriate time for the pioneers of Alaska. The pioneers have never been a political organization, nor have they ever been regionally minded. Their membership has extended to every part of Alaska, and their great common bond has been their common cause and great pride in all of Alaska, and their esteem and affection for one another. The pioneers of Alaska have a great inspiring tradition and the selflessness that comes of shared experience and, as often as not, shared hardship. But instead of living in the past, as its name could suggest, the pioneers have continued to be a dynamic, vital, forward-looking organization with a concern for Alaska's future coupled with an awareness of a glorious past. All this is good, and because of it, I am especially pleased to be of you and with you here today, and to talk about Alaska's present and future. Alaska today is making a remarkable transition to full equality and full maturity among the states of our Union. That transition, in 20 short months, has been truly remarkable in the scope and magnitude of its achievements. That in so short a time, so much has happened, so much has been done to transform us from territoriality to statehood is lasting proof of our political maturity as a people. Responsibility has been met, and improvements in governmental structure and service have been altogether impressive. And in making that statement, I say that applies to the general feeling and the general aid that has come to your public service from all of the citizens of Alaska, regardless of their political affiliation. I cannot overstate that Alaska has had an extremely capable first legislature, which has met its responsibilities with credit and courage. Both political parties were represented in that legislature. Lately, however, a gravely serious and disquieting condition has developed which threatens irreparable harm. Harm through delay, harm through diverting our efforts from the prime problems of transition, and harm greatest of all by dividing our people through the bitterness of regionalism run rampant. As a lifelong Alaskan, I say that this sectionalism could become the greatest tragedy in Alaska's history by setting area against area at the very moment when unity is of paramount importance to all. Alaskans have always gloried in the vastness of this great land, as properly all should. If today's vastness and its distances are exploited instead to divide us, we are truly in big statewide trouble. Our strength lies in our unity, for we are very few enough at best. Deep, pervading division of our people can only weaken this state and undo the excellent start we have made in meeting transitional problems and in building a sound foundation for our statehood status. Alaskans, as few peoples anywhere, have enjoyed a kinship and a oneness from Barrow to Ketchikan and from Adak to Eagle. This has been true because there are relatively few of us, and we have long been far removed from other people, with the consequence that we have been drawn closer together in a common, devoted identity and purpose. We must not lose that. We must cherish and preserve. On the threshold of the great new growth, we must strive together to attain full growth in every area, geographically and industrially, as one people, united in our purpose and in our devotion to all of Alaska. Most of you perhaps know that right here in Seward, I am very close to home ground. I was born on Prince William Sound, grew up there, went to school there, worked in the canneries, in the mines, and for the Old Road Commission on the Richardson Trail. As a youngster, I used to fly over here throughout this district. And when the other day my son brought home a motor scooter, I had a lot of doubts about it, until I remembered my mother's having had a few doubts too. What I am saying is this. If I were exclusively regionally minded, this south central part of Alaska is home to me. But no one can serve in the office you have entrusted to me and be guided by regional thinking. I have taken a solemn oath to do just the opposite, namely, to act to the best of my ability for the total interest of all of Alaska. I, as any mortal, will make mistakes. But among my mistakes will not be that of a narrow regionalist. It is that determination, that knowledge that each of us who is truly Alaskan-minded must work for all, that gives me such satisfaction and hope in being permitted to appear at this critical hour in our history before this great selfless fraternal order, the pioneers of Alaska. In the job I have sworn to do to the best of my ability, I have a compelling awareness of our needs. For they are forcibly before me every hour of every day. Our needs for hospitals and schools, our needs for roads and airports, and both parts, our needs for new payroll, new money, and an enlarged economy, our needs to meet health and welfare obligations, and those of public safety and law enforcement. All of these make me very budget conscious, which is to say, tax conscious. Taxes there will be to meet the needs mentioned. But because our needs are many, we are obliged to do first things first in order to keep taxation within reasonable limits. We are, as a state, in good financial shape. But we are not in such shape that budgeting is easy. We must weigh relative needs and do those things first that are most essential or that will enable us to grow and to develop. Among essentials is that of bringing in new money and new payroll. This means promotional expenditure, tourist promotion as an example. And it means the routing of highways to give access to resources and to provide those routes that will best stimulate commerce, trade, and tourism. At the present time, the state of Alaska is in strong financial position, yet we cannot, we dare not, stand still. To be complacent, to be idle, is to go backward. And for every state and most foreign countries, are competing with us for the tourist dollar. We have attractions far greater than most, yet we must continue to go out and tell our story. This takes direct appropriation for promotional work and will require consideration of two other means of self-help now available to us. And I think that I have an obligation to talk to you about these matters as Alaskans because they are important matters that will be decided by you as Alaskans with no partisanship whatsoever, but with consideration as to what you personally feel is best for Alaska. Those of you who have been at the Anchorage and Fairbanks International Airport in recent months know how congested those facilities have become with increasing international traffic. That condition will be worse before it is better. We cannot fail to correct it, for if left uncorrected, it will curtail traffic, send this air traffic elsewhere, will curtail tourism, interest in Alaska, and local payroll. I have recently announced my intention to recommend to the next legislature the issuance of revenue bonds to enlarge both terminals and the services at each airport. Their increased revenue will be pledged to retire the debt. The eyes of the world are literally upon us, and we must act promptly, vigorously, and with faith in Alaska and in ourselves. Meanwhile, I have approached the United States Public Health Service and Customs and Immigration Services toward enlargement of federal services sufficient to meet growing traffic at each airport, and have received several favorable responses. Second, and related to that which I have just mentioned, is our need to tie all Alaska into one network. We are programming this on the land side, and it will come about just as rapidly as funds permit. In this respect, I wish to mention a few little publicized gains made by Alaska in the last time. That gain in the amount of $4 million a year came about through passage of the Alaska Authored Amendment to equalize the federal aid highway formula so that virtually all non-taxable federal lands in the several states are treated alike in the formula for state aid. Alaska will derive greater gains under that bill than will most states. But the principle gained is so beneficial and so long overdue as to all of the western states that all of their congressional delegations fell into line by supporting these proposals. The state of Alaska will realize enormous advantage in its road building program and in increased payroll by virtue of that bill's passage. Another part of our unifying highway network will be before us for attention at the general election to be held on November 8, 1960. You, the voters, will then have a number of bonding proposals before you for consideration. While each of these bonding proposals has merit, I should like to touch upon the great need for adoption of one in particular, and the importance of this adoption in promoting tourism and other industrial development throughout our great state. I refer to the issuance of bonds not to exceed the amount of $23 million for enlarging our state ferry and road system. Approval of this proposal at the polls is of utmost statewide importance. Its favorable impact on Alaska's economic growth will extend both north of the Gulf of Alaska and to the Panhandle. Its stimulus to tourism will be tremendous all over Alaska, for it will mean that Alaska's visitors will have two routes instead of one for entry and departure. It will permit the trucking industry, now engaged in transporting food and other items to interior Alaska, to gain a backhaul to the markets of the Midwest and the Mississippi Valley. Frozen fish alone could provide an annual backhaul of 20 million pounds. I believe all will agree that all of Alaska must have a highway system to unify its people and to connect its many centers of population with transportation facilities which can provide easy year-round access. If that is not provided by making use of the natural water highway system of the inland passes, it must be provided by land. No doubt the day will come when both means will exist. But in the meantime, the savings permitted through the water highway system versus the extensive construction of road links in coastal areas will benefit the entire state by not committing available road money to the costly expenditures necessary for those land connections. Because the proposed ferry system will play an altogether vital role in the development of our tourist and economic resources, and because such a system will in every way serve to tie this great land together, I unhesitatingly personally recommend its passage at the polls in November, regardless of any partisan affiliation, because this is not a partisan issue. You are going to have to make your judgment on this proposal as an election. Certainly, we know the beneficial effect car ferry systems have had on tourism on the Great Lakes. In Puget Sound and in British Columbia, we can repeat that experience right here at home. In addition to providing for the water highway system to tie the North of the Gulf highway network to the rest of Alaska, the same bond issue would provide for a car ferry link to connect Kodiak Island with the mainland of Alaska through Anchorage and Homer. The same favorable commercial transportation features would be experienced on this system as have been outlined for the Haines Skagway Prince Rupert system. And finally, the bond issue will provide additional road money for federal matching purposes or pioneer access roads or other such highway needs as may be most in the public interest. The adoption of the car ferry proposal as the surest means of our helping ourselves and ensuring the last of the same. Bonding method of financing, Alaska at present is almost alone among the states in having no indebtedness. However, that is not necessarily an enviable situation. If it means that to stay out of debt, we do without needed public improvement. Inaction and timidity can retard development. In the past, Alaska's own public improvements have been financed almost exclusively by direct appropriation from the Treasury. While that method has kept us on a cash basis, it has sharply limited the public improvements we could buy each year. This has affected schools, hospitals, airports, roads, and harbor facilities provided in whole or in part from state or territorial funds. Considered another way, we have been in the position of a family that could not buy a home until it could pay for it outright in cash and in full. How many families would ever be housed in a place of their own if that were the only method of home acquisition? Instead, homes are purchased in the same manner that most public improvements are achieved elsewhere, on the bonding principle, with payments made over a long period of years. Public improvements bought for cash are paid for by today's taxpayers alone. Those bought by the bonding method are paid for by the user over the useful life of the improvement, be it 20, 30, or 40 years. In this manner, more needed improvements are gained at one time. Development is encouraged, opportunity is enlarged, living conditions are improved, and the burden is spread over a far greater period of time and number of people, providing good judgment is used in the selection of the proposal that the bonding would cover. In stressing one bonding proposal, I have no thought of minimizing the importance of the several others. All deserve the support of Alaskans who wish to see this state grow and improve, and all, standing together, are within our foreseeable bonding capacity and ability to repay on a conventional debt servicing basis. Since I met with you last year in convention in Nome, your state government has moved steadily ahead on all fronts. New programs have been undertaken and notable progress has been recorded. Not the least of these achievements is the activation of our state court system, which for the first time in our history means that we have our own judiciary. Other territories have, but never the territory of Alaska. Our state's Department of Fish and Game received wholehearted praise from the industry and individual fishermen alike for its handling of the huge Bristol Bay salmon run and acid test in its first year of administrative responsibility. Its policy of maintaining a constant field alert, coupled with the flexibility provided under its regulations, added the welcome jingle of almost $1 million extra dollars to the pockets of Alaska fishermen as the department moved quickly to take advantage of an unexpectedly abundant run in the Bristol Bay area. Other areas did not fare so well. Instead, a grave condition of wholesale hardship faces many fishing communities in the months ahead. Until our fishery may be restored by vigorous, enlightened state action, we may for some years be faced with this tragic condition in much of coastal Alaska, with the need for public works and direct assistance, all clearly attributable to the mismanagement of the resource over many generations of distant control. And we must be prepared to assist these people through adequate legislative provision. Concurrent with the adoption of realistic and workable regulations for the administration of our land and mineral resources, your Department of Natural Resources has moved ahead with its program of land selection. Slightly more than 5¼ million acres have been selected after careful consideration of their potential, although patent or tentative approval has been received from the federal government on only about 200,000 acres. Perhaps I might mention briefly at this point my recent request of the Secretary of the Interior that he make available for state selection the 8.5 million acre area of Northeast Alaska, which has been the subject of discussion as a possible location for a federally constituted Arctic wildlife range. This request was made in keeping with the mandate of Alaska's Constitution for the multi-purpose use of Alaska's land, and in the belief that this end and the purpose of true conservation would better be served by state management instead of federal. It is our plan, should this request be approved, to open the area to mineral exploration with such safeguards as will retain its attractions for other uses and prevent the destruction of wildlife and wild valley. Once the mineral potential has been determined, and after the necessary biological studies have been made to delineate the area most conducive to accomplishment of the broad conservation objective, the state will then act to assure management of the area in keeping with the goal of maximum benefit for all Alaskans as expressed in our Constitution. It is my hope, and it is the objective of your state administration, that Alaska may become known nationally and internationally for its program of resource conservation under the multiple use principle. I do not feel that end would be reached under the interpretation now being given federal law by those in authority. I could go on at length discussing the progress made in other fields as the various departments of your state government take hold and move ahead in their determination to serve you. I will close, however, by citing one other recent action, which I feel has long been needed in the interest of an efficient and business-like administration and in fairness and equity to state employees. This was the giving effect to the State Personnel Act adopted by the last legislature. For the first time, as a result of the rules and regulations adopted under this act, there has been spelled out in black and white the rights and the obligations of state employees. Positions will be filled on the basis of competitive examination, open to all. Classifications have been established covering all types of work and all departments, with specific pay scale assigned to each classification. This latter phase particularly will provide a long-needed uniformity among the various departments. with pay based on the principle of like pay for like work. The inequity which existed with each, when each individual department paid what it wished, will have been eliminated. This has been a brief account of our stewardship and our handling of your affairs in the early days of statehood. It is necessarily brief because the transitional period has been extremely active, and a full recital would require far more time and perhaps perspective of history. But I tell you confidently, as a pioneer from a pioneer family, that Alaska is moving ahead, and that the vision of the pioneers of Alaska in demanding home rule for Alaska generations ago has proven itself. In the resultant grant of statehood, the pioneers may take great credit and have great pride in having provided the instrument for the future, as in their earlier labors, the pioneers gave Alaska its impetus in the past. Let us, as one people, continue in that spirit for the advancement of this great land and for all of our people. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Governor Egan. We have with us at this session two past grand presidents. We have Robert D. Armand of Ketchikan and Otto Coppin of Cordova. And our grand officers of this session present are acting grand president Lester Gore from Ketchikan, second grand vice president Carl Lutzfeldt from Anchorage, Chaplain James Jorgensen from Fairbanks, the Grand Secretary Theo McKenna from Fairbanks, the Grand Recorder Linda Schaefer from Fairbanks, the Grand Sergeant at Arms Captain Bernard from Cordova, and the trustees, Grand Trustees present is Robert Korn from Cordova, and Max McGilvery from Ketchikan, and yours truly from Surrey. I'm on the list, but I'm here. The presidents of the igloos who are present at this convention are Paul Griman from Fairbanks, J.W. Levers of Juneau, Seward, Carl Lockfeld of Anchorage, and Jerry Cochran of Cordova. The auxiliary presidents present are Francis Lockie of Anchorage, Mary Ferry of Ketchikan, Mary Sock of Fairbanks, and Francis Jones of Seward. That covers the introduction of our dignitaries, officers, and it is time to get the convention moving. And right now, I will call upon our president, Seward Shea, to present our acting grand president with a little token.
Lester Gore, it seems that it's time for you to assume your duties as grand president of our igloo. On behalf of igloo number 9, Seward, I'd like to present you this gathering for the picture.
Well, thank you very, very much. I haven't earned it yet. I'm going to keep it anyway. We've all been in the business of the meeting, but I wish to make a comment. Governor referred to the failure of fish in the southeastern. See that bunch of Ketchikan delegates? See, they're always up on their toes. So this time they come as the pulp capital of Alaska. Mr. Mayor, support of the businessmen in the community and the citizens of the community. Now, we have seen that in Seward. We've noticed the way that you have decorated your city. We've noticed the various photographs of the old time days that's fitting with our work. And we're very, very much complimented on what the businessmen of this community have done to make this session a successful one. And as mayor, I wish you to convey our thanks to the council and to your Chamber of Commerce and to the citizens of Seward for everything you've done to make our state a blessing.
Indeed, I will, sir.
Carl, do you hear me down there all right? Well, we'll get into the business of the meeting, and first, I want to announce that all officers are in their chairs with the exception of the grand historian. Dr. Chase is not able to come, and I wish to say that we have our former governor, George Parks, as a delegate from Juneau. And I'm going to ask George to assume the chair of the grand historian, and I would ask the sergeant at arms or the second vice president to convey to Mr. George Parks to the chair. You lose that one. I think you lose that one. Contrary minded.